that per the agenda, we will have two public comment periods during this meeting. The first will be to receive comments specific to the two policies that the board will consider today. Public comment not specific to those two policies will be heard at the end of the meeting after all of the other board agenda items have taken place. We have both in person here in the Capitol as well as virtual comments like we traditionally do. In order to speak, just a reminder of to the public comment, please fill out the comment card if you're in the room. And if you're not, if you're online, then please hand your card in. And if you're online, Lynn will actually give you a number according to the order that she receives it through the queue. Please wait to enter the queue until instructed, and then we will go to the public comment period at that point. Anyone in the queue prior to that will be cleared out of the queue. And those who wish to speak will use the raise the hand tool, and our folks from behind the scenes will actually get you into the queue and then announce who's first, second, third. Again, all comments will be 2 minutes for the general comment period, and we will have a sounder basically that will alert you to when your comment period is done. All right, let's move on to the approval of the minutes. I need a motion, Dan or Jerry, to approve the minutes from October 11th, 2022.
This is Senator Stevenson. I would move to approve the minutes of 11 of what the date again? Excuse
me. October 11th.
October 11th. That's right. 2022. Okay.
Oh, that's not. Sorry. There's two sets. Oh, we're going to do them both at the same time. There's a motion and a second on each one of them. So we're going to do them at the same time. Jerry, if I can have your amend your motion to October 18th and October 11th.
Yes, we will consider the first part of that, the first half of the motion. And now we can move to the second half, which is October the 18th. And that's my motion.
And I'll second that motion. This is Dan Hemmer.
Thanks, Dan. All those in favor of the October 11th and October 18th minutes, please say aye.
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 Perfect. Those are approved. Ben, it looks like it's your time for the executive director report. Love to hear from you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'll lead in with the executive director's report, and then we've got a few items here. But we've been saying this a lot lately, but I'll say it again. This is one of those really important meetings for us in terms of really ensuring that we're going the right direction and making sure that what we're doing is transparent and that what we're doing is in the public's best interest as well. And we're confident that we're moving that direction. So I'm going to cover a few different items in my executive director's report. And then after that, we'll go into two plan updates that for us are just really critical in terms of how we move forward as the Utah Inland Port Authority. So first, with my executive director's report, let me just say when Jack retired a couple of months ago, we had a chance to acknowledge him and all that he has done for the Utah Inland Port Authority. We have had another significant and substantive change in our office. We just wanted to say a huge thank you to Jill Fligar, who has left her service at the Utah Inland Port Authority. But we just wanted to say thank you to her for her several years of service on behalf of the Port Authority. And so just a huge thank you to her. I know we won't be able to have the same kind of send-off we were able to have with Jack, but we did want to say a thank you for her service. Also, just an update for the board and the public in terms of the rural visits. We've had a lot of folks who've reached out to us, both those who are interested in what our course of action is going to be in rural Utah, outside the Wasatch Front and even outside our one main project area, and also those rural areas who have been very interested in partnering and talking about the future. And so I have been asked by the stakeholder groups that are interested in what our course of action and role will be, which we'll go over a little bit during the business plan update, but just to make sure that we are transparent in terms of what we are doing. So we have been contacted by a number of rural areas that have invited us out. As far as I'm concerned, these are kind of just wiping the slate clean and kind of starting a little bit from scratch in terms of what we hope to accomplish. But we have been up to Box Elder. We've been to West Weber County. We've had a chance to meet with the six county area in JUAB in the surrounding counties and also with Cedar City. And in all areas, there's definitely been some interesting opportunities and some real opportunities for partnerships. Before we move forward with anything substantive or start to put any plans in place, we are going to outline in today's meeting what our process is actually going to be. And I want to talk about that a little bit when we get to the plans, but I do want to acknowledge that we have been contacted and that we are out in rural Utah, having visits right now. And as we have things to report back to the board, we will do so. With regards to legislation that is forthcoming, we all take note when the legislative session begins, especially those on the board. There's a lot going on. We do just want to give a quick update in terms of some of the things that are really important for our office. One of the things that we've been asked to look at is, with respect particularly to the audit, is ensuring that within statute, we are going to remain in compliance and have very sound internal controls, particularly when it comes to procurement policy. Now, as I said during a very, very early report out regarding the audit, we want to keep the honest honest. And one of the ways to do that is to actually change statute and make sure that what our statute says will help to govern us and make sure that internally we're doing exactly what we need to be doing and ensuring that we've got good internal controls to protect the public's money and public funds. So we are looking at some potential legislative changes. We're working with legislative sponsors as we do have actual legislative statute changes. We will make sure to keep the board apprised of what those changes would be. And then obviously, anything else is under the jurisdiction of the legislature. So it would just follow, obviously, normal legislative processes. But we did want to alert the board and the public that that is one of the changes that we are considering to ensure that we remain in compliance and have strong internal controls within the Inland Port. And we're more than okay with any of those changes being made. We feel like we appreciate the oversight and we're okay with those, even in statute and especially in statute. The policy review process, I'm actually going to skip that. I'm going to let Amy cover that during one of our policy reviews. I will just say concerning the audit and the changes that have been made internally, not just with regards to policy. I know this is something that the public sees and is more prevalent in terms of the policies that we bring before the board. I feel like the policies that we're going to review today, the policies we'll be looking at during the next couple of meetings, we're absolutely going in the right direction. There'll always be improvements, things we can look at, but I feel like this organization is stronger than it's ever been. And as a team this morning, we were talking, but I feel very, very strongly that before we can sell this organization and make sure that others really believe in our mission and scope, which we intend to do, but we have to have a strong, strong internal organization to make sure that there's a strong foundation. We've got a good business plan, master plan, which we're talking about today, that policy's in a good place, but also that our internal controls are in a good place as well. And I will just say from the executive director's purview, I feel like we're absolutely going in the right direction. We are a much different and stronger organization than what we were 2 months ago. And I would absolutely commend our team. They're doing a great job pivoting, making sure that we've got all the right internal controls, but we feel like we are putting in place a much stronger foundation for the Inland Port and making sure that we are looking to create a generational organization. With regards to a couple of policies that we're going to be looking at in the next few meetings, first, AIB, which is our infrastructure bank. This is an account that was set up a couple of legislative sessions ago, and I want to specifically make note of this because the money in here that was set aside, which is substantial, even though it may not be statutorily governed as such, was really meant to help establish our presence with logistics projects in rural Utah. So over the next couple of months, we're going to be refining any processes related to this infrastructure bank and making sure that we can use it exactly for its intended purpose and use it not only effectively, but also more expeditiously when we come across those opportunities. And there are those opportunities that are out there. So we will be looking at our infrastructure bank policy, tightening it up, making sure that it's in a good place so that we can start to deploy those funds. Obviously, as they're available, but we'll be able to deploy those funds as we have opportunities to do so. And so one of the other ones that we're going to be looking at, one of the legislative changes during the last session was a tax differential incentives opportunity. So the recruitment process, and I want to speak to this because it has been a little confusing, and I want to assure both the public and our stakeholders and the board, when we're talking about recruitment, we're not talking about becoming more like the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity with what they do in terms of statewide recruitment or the Economic Development Corporation of Utah. What we're talking about is recruitment that is aligned with local project area needs. So not looking outside of project areas, but how do we really bolster regional economies, specifically in alignment with our logistics pieces? And so the recruitment process for us is going to be a very, very key policy as well. So we know there's some in statute, but we feel like we want to do some refining. So in the next several meetings, next couple of meetings, we will be looking at these two policies in particular to make sure that we're aligned, but also that we can move forward in a transparent and coordinated way that will benefit the project areas that we are working in. Obviously, we just have one currently. But there's a potential, and we'll see, you know, what the future looks like. Before we go to truck parking, which is the last item, I'm actually going to see if Stephen can cover this item. Just while he's coming up to the microphone, one of the things that I will say is we have our next meeting. We're scheduled for December 14th. After today, you'll kind of see why that meeting's sort of pivotal, as it's a strong continuation of this meeting here today. But one of the things that I'll just say is next year we intend to go back to a quarterly meeting cycle for the board, unless we have really imperative items that come up in the interim. But we intend to go back to a quarterly meeting cycle, unless the board chooses otherwise. But we've heard from the board that they feel like a quarterly meeting cycle is probably more appropriate. And so we'll have dates that we're working on, but we did just want to signal the board and the public that we'll probably go to a more regular meeting cycle starting next year. And so with that update, Madam Chair, if it's okay, we'll have Stephen just give a quick update on the truck parking project.
Absolutely, Stephen. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much. And you guys can hear me okay. No? Thanks. How's that?
Better.
Ooh, I can hear myself. Okay, good. Well, hey, thanks, members of the board, for giving me the opportunity to give you a quick update. I'm Stephen Smith. I am I'm on the business development team for the Utah Inland Port Authority. We wanted to give you just a quick update on our efforts around truck parking. We presented some initial information on this back on the September 26th board meeting. Just a quick update, if we can move forward. Thanks. What we're trying to do here is ultimately provide a solution that will address on-street truck parking in the region and the lack thereof of realistic available truck parking. In addition to that, we want to include auxiliary plugins to eliminate truck idling, and then engage an experienced truck parking operator to help us manage that facility to a high standard, since that's not our area of expertise, and then ultimately utilize the west 7 acres of the UIPA controlled property at 5 South 5100 West for this secure overnight truck parking. And that we really want to make sure that we put that facility to good use, because it is already paved. It has striping for 204 truck spots. So really a great opportunity for us to utilize that and address this situation. So just a little bit of an update on the process. And here you can see just a proposed facility map overlaid over the existing facility. This is, again, a draft concept drawing, so the final result may look a little bit different. But the status right now is we're looking at working with the proposed operator to do a revenue share lease agreement discussion and finalizing that, as well as some of the operational requirements to operate the facility. So things like how will gate access work, what will the restroom facilities look like, et cetera. Financially, with that revenue share lease agreement, we expect, we're targeting for a positive cash flow here in about 12 months when we get up to speed and get the occupancy into that facility. Once that happens, we should see ideally the truck parking on the sides of the streets and the neighborhoods come down commiserate with that. And then we're also finalizing some of the ongoing operational expenses, things that are along the lines of asphalt maintenance and marketing. But ideally, we would like to get to the final conclusion with that operator about mid-December. So we're moving very quickly with that and hopefully getting some of those final terms and agreements down so that we can ideally speak to this in the next board meeting. We'll move to the next slide. We wanted to also address some of the questions that came up when we presented this back in September, and that was how we're looking to offset some of the maybe the environmental concerns of a facility like this, things such as heat island mitigation. I want to note that from an emissions perspective, we were awarded a CMAQ grant about a year and a half ago or so that would assist us in the purchasing of truck stop electrification pedestals. Essentially, those allow a truck to plug in like you would at an RV stop so that they don't have to idle overnight. So that funding is already in place. We want to put it to use here. We're also looking at other technologies that would allow some of that emissions and idling reduction through technology. Additionally, we're looking at other ways to consider heat island mitigation. Again, these are things that are a little bit more forward-facing, but that we've taken a look at some of the potential solutions out there, such as looking at additional green space, which on the prior slide, you'll see they have a little bit in there. We'd like to do more. And then also bring in some shade options, including maybe potentially organic, vine-based things like that, shade cloth. And then lastly, looking at water and stormwater management, including filtration for stormwater, drip irrigation. There's already drip irrigation on the property, but also expanding that as we look at more green space and then incorporating more drought-tolerant plants for that green space and landscaping. So a couple of ideas that we have. We expect this to really be iterative. So as we go along with this facility, we can enhance that more. We can do some more creative things to make that really a top-notch space. So that's hopefully just a quick update for you. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take those.
Any questions from the board? Yes.
Abby, can you hear me?
Jerry, we have you. Go right ahead.
Okay. All I was going to say is, you know, some of us had opportunity to visit that site in, I don't know, August or September. And I think it's incredible what could happen there. It looks like it'll solve a lot of problems, not just the inland port, but for a lot of businesses around that area. So this looks like a great path to be forced to be headed down.
Thanks, Jerry. Victoria?
Thank you for especially the hearing the environmental concerns in that heat island, because when we were there in August, it was also notable that we almost melted to the pavement just walking into the door. The other thing is I would really love it if you would reach out to the city, particularly the administrative side, and coordinate when this opens. I'd like for us to enhance our enforcement to create both the stick and the carrot for this to become a success, and so that my neighborhood gets deconflicted with trains or trucks.
Absolutely. We certainly would welcome the help.
Yeah, anything to get some of the trucks off the roads and away from our pedestrian pathway would be great. Thank you very much for this update, Stephen.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ben, back to you for anything.
So
that concludes the executive director's report.
Great. You're going to see on the agenda here, everyone, that we're going to get to hear from a lot of senior staff people today. So Chad, you're up next. If you want to come up and give us a presentation on the draft business plan.
Madam Chair, while he's coming up, could I just give a little bit of context?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So those who remember the audit, one of the things that the auditors pointed out to us was that we needed to have in place a proper business plan and a master plan. I'm going to differentiate those two things a little bit, because one of the things was they said that the organization did not have a proper plan in place, but they also noted that we did not have a proper plan in place in the Northwest Quadrant, specifically around the bond that we were going to be, that we had already received and been through the process for. And so we have separated these two assignments out, and our two assignments and our two plans that we're looking at, and this is how we responded to the audit, was that we are going to have a more transparent better outline of our business organization. As a reminder, the purpose of this is to take what's in statute, which is extremely complicated, and provide that bridge for the general public and for our board and for our stakeholders to understand exactly what our organization's purpose is. The auditors noted and felt like that was lacking. So we want to make sure that we get this right. The master plan provides help as well in terms of what we're doing in the jurisdictional area. But one of the things that I'll say as we go into this is that we feel like both of these documents are absolutely critical for helping the public to understand exactly what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Now, both of these programs, both of these master plans thus far have been developed in-house. We're going to pivot slightly on the master plan as it relates to the Northwest Quadrant, what Alan's going to talk about. We are working in coordination with Salt Lake City. We understand they have a role to play in this. And so as we consider the interlocal agreement and the studies that we've agreed to complete, we want to make sure that we're pivoting to allow for thorough studies. That is one thing that has been made clear time and time again as a desire, is that we do a very thorough job with regards to the community impact, the health impact, and the traffic impact. We'll go into that as Alan gets up. But let me just say this. There will be one of the takeaways, and I know this going into it, so I'm just going to acknowledge it and maybe diffuse it, maybe not up front, but there will be some sentiment after these two reports that these are still fairly short. They're concise. I'll say it that way. That's purposeful. Right now, I think one of the mistakes previously made was going out and having too big and too broad of a report and a study that didn't allow us to really hone in the way that we needed to. So right now, I will acknowledge that these reports are fairly concise. And the reason they are is because this purpose that we're going through right now is an alignment purpose. There will be a public process where we really have to engage the public, particularly as we go into the master plan that Alan will present. But for the purpose of the business plan that is really located in statute, we have to be concise, but we want to make sure that everyone is aligned with what we're doing. So the process will be, we'll present both the business plan for our organization and the master plan for the Northwest Quadrant in today's meeting. We're not asking the board to take motions or action on these items, but we're just asking right now, it's just a review. We will post both these plans are already posted. We want to provide an opportunity for the public to weigh in. At our next meeting in December, we will hopefully have had a chance to hear back from the public, and we will actually have an opportunity for the board to adopt these two plans as they stand, and which in the case of the master plan will lead to a more thorough vendor process in consultation with Salt Lake City. But we're asking for the board to actually adopt these two documents on December 14th. So hence the importance of that meeting. Now, I will say whether we're working in the rural part of the state or in the Northwest Quadrant, the issues are the same. We're at the crossroads of the economy and logistics and transportation. And how do we use one to help the other? And so as we move into this process and into these two presentations, we're really talking about our future actions at the Inland Port. And again, this is an issue of an effort for transparency. So it is concise, but we hope that that will be easier to digest and allow us to continue to build things out, not only for the next iteration of the plan that's adopted, but even after that, as we continue to make amendments and to define our organization's role in the state. So with that, Chad, I will turn it over to you if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Absolutely, Chad. Mic's all yours.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Madam Chair. So my name is Chad Whitlock. I am the Chief Operating Officer for the Utah Inland Port Authority. Today, I'd like to introduce the strategic business plan. This plan that upon board approval enables UIPA to engage in outlined activity. We also want to communicate this plan to our stakeholders and public while highlighting the priorities and focus that UIPA will be taking on for the next 4 years. We also would like to present this plan to the board for an introduction in this meeting, November, and then for adoption in our December meeting. Next slide, please. The direction that we're taking within the plan, it's going to be one that helps UIPA better meet statutory requirements. It will act as a guide for UIPA from 2023 through 27. It will shift logistics to an enabler role instead of an end goal type of a role. It will focus on how growth and innovation happen, not just at the state level, but more specifically at the regional level within which we're engaging, while also identifying the industry types that generate momentum and economic growth within those regions that we're operating in. Next slide, please. Our responsibilities to the environment and communities are strong. We have a sustainable land use development and jurisdictional framework study that will be completed by the end of 2022. The intent behind this is to use it as a framework to engage the different partners and businesses that we'll be operating with throughout these regions and in the project areas to come up with a better way to manage and build with our environment in mind. We also have a complete environmental review process that we're going to be doing before we start regional projects. And then our community needs will be identified and planning with input and local leaders. This is a continuation of the collaborative stance that the organization has taken under Executive Director Hart. So in short, we're going to work with our communities and listen to our community to understand what their needs are in our planning process. Next slide, please. Before I get into the core of our strategic business plan, there's some definitions that we need to land on. And so I'm just going to go through those very quickly. The first one is the Utah Inland Port Authority, statewide organization overseeing all project areas, activities, and logistic projects within its purview. That's us. A project area, the geographic area, which is with defined boundaries for regional economic development. We only have one right now. That's the jurisdictional area that's located within Salt Lake County. A logistic project is defined rail, truck, or air projects serving regional businesses or to optimize regions as a destination for economic growth. Next slide, please. And then the last two definitions, a region, multi-jurisdictional with shared regional planning, labor markets, infrastructure integrations, and economic interdependency. There are no boundaries on this. The boundaries that we will actually work with in a region are going to be defined collaboratively with the groups that we're working with. And then finally, the regional project. This is any initiative that's utilizing UIPA resources. Next slide, please. So getting to the core of the strategic business plan, we have our goal, and that is generational regional economic growth. We can leverage the intersection of two very important elements to achieve this goal. Those elements are regional economic empowerment and then also logistics solutions to connect domestic and global marketplaces. Next slide. Breaking each of these elements down, there are objectives that we've set to guide us to achieving this goal. For regional economic empowerment, we will first develop regional projects. We will also develop project area master plans, which Alan Evans is going to be speaking to us later in today's meeting. Develop regional logistic projects, build regional industries, part of which Ben was speaking to earlier today about that recruitment facet, and then develop strategic financing plan. Next slide. Breaking the second element down leads to a much more broad, but just as important range of objectives. We want to develop statewide logistic plans that ensure strategic advantage for Utah-based shippers. In order to do this, we need to bring in federal grants. We need to focus on green technologies, alternative fuel initiatives, green tech incentives, rolling out digital infrastructure. We need to focus on our environmental policy and initiatives, which I spoke to earlier. Identify import and export opportunities, working with our international and domestic port partnerships, also while working with federal and state transportation partnerships. Taking these, we can combine them and achieve the logistics solution for it to connect our domestic and global marketplaces. Next slide. And then also contained within the strategic business plan, I'd like to highlight some of our governance that we've got in place. We have our fiscal and strategic oversight. We have the board of directors, such as yourselves, as our governing body. And then the executive director, Executive Director Hart, just overseeing our day-to-day oversight. UIPA performance, this is something that I'm personally invested in. We're going to be tracking our achievements and our progress, and we're going to do it in qualitative and quantitative fashion that monitors our progress to achieving the different objectives that I've just outlined. And then finally, our stakeholder participation. This is going through and doing regular and proactive stakeholder input, an open door policy, an interactive website, and public meetings all combined to further the transparent and collaborative direction that the authority is taking. And then at this point, our last two slides are more statutory duties and responsibilities, but I just want to take a nod to time here because I'm running short. I'd like to pause here because nothing's really changed in our statutory duties and responsibilities. Those are very well known at this point, and these slides don't really bring anything new to the table. But I'd like to take a pause here to see if there's any questions that the board might have that I can answer.
Thanks, Chad. Any questions from the board, Victoria?
So the issues of economic justice and environmental protection are ubiquitous in this project, no matter if we're talking about the west side of Salt Lake or Beaver County or Juab or wherever. So the idea that we would eventually replicate is something that, of course, has to be part of our considerations. However, most of the funding sources I see here are not going to pay for staffing. And at this point, there is an element of momentum. Mm-hmm. At this point, I have huge concerns about us diversifying and taking staff attention away from the projects that we've already committed to, making sure that the Salt Lake City project area, which is going to be demanding for multiple reasons, but notably because we are the largest city in the state. Do we have metrics or like a checklist for when it will be appropriate for us to designate new project areas? Or is this always going to be an arbitrary conversation about, well, there's kind of like, I know Cedar City kind of has a perfect storm forming right now. Are we going to eventually get to the place where we have concrete objective metrics that we can say this project area meets all of these qualifications, so it's time for us to move forward there?
We absolutely will. Yeah. And the planning, when the detailed plan, the detailed strategic business plan, you can find on our website, as Executive Director Hart said earlier. And so you can find some more details there. However, going back to your question, there has to be criteria. Otherwise, it's just more of a by the seat of your pants type of an approach. This is too important for that. And so the criteria will be developed, and the criteria won't be developed in silo. It'll be something that we thoughtfully go through with folks that we are partnering with and collaborating with, while also taking our expertise and bringing it to the table to formulate what that criteria might be, and then executing against that.
Thank you.
So there's an element of planning that needs to happen.
Thank you.
Chad, I would just add, that's a perfect answer. Thank you. But I would also just add, if we don't get this right in Salt Lake City, at the Salt Lake City project area, we're just going to continue to fail project area after project area. And so as Alan presents as well, I think we're being very, very thoughtful about how we get the first one right and making sure that it's not arbitrary in terms of what the process is for potentially a new project area coming online. But our position from the beginning has and will continue to be, this is not about quantity. We can't make this about quantity. It's got to be about quality and making sure that first in Salt Lake, we've got to get it right. And then potentially for other opportunities, we've got to get those right. And as we look at Salt Lake City first, that's our obviously our highest priority. But there will come a time where in limited areas and parts of the state, we can move out and potentially try and either replicate or bring something unique to that project area as well, but certainly not losing sight of Salt Lake.
Thank you. Any other questions from the board?
Yeah, this is Jerry. Let me, I'd like to make a comment. I really enjoyed the direction going in. This is, I think, what was intended quite a while ago. But I would add that, you know, some of these local projects, let me use Cedar City as an example. Those projects are best handled and best understood by local officials down there. And sometimes maybe the best thing we can do is to review their process, walk hand in hand with them to get where they need to be, and then help them with, for instance, maybe the loan fund fits what they want to do, and we can aid in that process. The loan fund is something we know we're going to have to grow in the state, and it isn't, that's not something we just have for the inland port. That's needs to be in place for the Point of the Mountain and our other authorities that we work with in the state. But I do believe we are really on the right track with the direction we're headed right now. And, I'm thoroughly convinced that some of these projects will be better be directed by those that understand them more closely. But they can sure use the pattern we need to make sure is in place. Thank you.
Yeah. Jerry, I would just say that's a perfect direction. I think that's exactly the way we're going. We're not going to go this alone anywhere, and we're not going to lead. And it's a very important distinction. We need local partners that want this and that are willing to help lead. And if they're not, then that's probably one of those criteria that doesn't meet our metric in terms of where we'll be operating and how we'll be involved. So Jerry, in terms of the local dynamic on the ground expertise, I absolutely agree. And Victoria did not ask this question, but I'm going to answer it anyway. The money slide here, Chad, if we could go back a few slides, the 1 point, this is the concept moving forward. Is we're going to come in, we're going to understand, we're going to convene. If there's a project there, then ultimately helping with the locals, hand in glove with the locals, allowing them to lead out. Jerry, to your point, I absolutely agree. Being able to be there for the right support. This is the process. It's not anything outside of this. It really is. We have not stipulated this yet, but I think before we do anything, we want at least 2 public meetings in an area before we bring it to the board for project area adoption, for transparency, and to make sure that we're deliberate. Now, for those who are going to say, but you didn't do this in Salt Lake City, I know, and we're trying to make that right. We've got our interlocal agreement signed. I feel like that's a strong willingness to say we want to do this the right way. But at the same time, we've got an incredible opportunity to work with Salt Lake City, to work with other stakeholders and do something really incredible in the Northwest Quadrant, which we'll talk about. But I would say that this is our process. This is the process we want to use moving forward.
And I would just add to that, you can get more about what that process might look like in the detailed plan, which is posted on our website, our draft.
Thanks, Chad. Any other comments from the board members online? Ben, Chad, I just appreciate the intentionality of this process. This is what, as board members, we've been looking for the 2.5-3 months that we've all been seated. So thank you for your work here. It's intentional, it's strategic. So keep up the good work.
Actually, Abby, can I say something? This is Dan.
Of course, Dan.
I just wanted to, you know, Ben, apologize for the succinctness of this. I actually want to applaud it. I think shorter in this case is better in substance over form. And just, as you said, appreciate what the work, but also want to emphasize that, you know, more is or less is more in this case. So
thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Chad, anything else from you?
Nothing more. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thanks for your time. We're going to hear from Alan Evans on the master plan presentation. As Executive Director Hart said before, we have the business plan that Chad just spoke about, and now we're going to hear about the status of the master plan. Alan, it is all you.
Okay, great. So I wanted to talk about a proposed master plan approach today. And I want to just be clear, this is an approach. It's not the master plan. So as we go through this and as we hear comments, that it's really about the approach we want to take to get to the master plan. So what I want to kind of go through is I want to just do a high level assessment of where we are currently. And then I want to talk about the approach and then talk about the timeline to go along with that. So first, as we kind of look about where things are, there's a lot of existing plans that exist already. You've got the city's got plans, the county has plans, UDOT has plans. And then as we go through those plans, there's a lot of things that we agree with and a lot of things that we align on. And really where we see the differences coming into play are when we start talking about logistics facilities. And so that's where we start to see the differences. And so a lot of these plans were done before the existence of the port. And so we believe that there is a need for a logistics infrastructure plan so that we, and to me, it really does two things. It tells us what if, any logistics facilities need to be, built. And it also becomes a guide to the spend of public monies. And so, you know, that's what where I feel like we, need to spend time. And then obviously there's the interlocal agreement that authorized certain specific studies. And then finally, we just heard from Chad talking about this regional shift in our business plan. So in the approach that, the authority is taking now. As we kind of go through these, this various assessment, it really funnels down into, two main areas. First, it's really the things that are, you know, aligning, with the plans and positioning us for the future. And then also, bolstering those plans, like we just talked about with the, logistics infrastructure plan and the other studies that are outlined. As we go through this, we see our role really in the, with the aligning is to convene those stakeholders and to support the execution of the plans that are going on right now, as well as then, working to bolster those plans with the logistic infrastructure plan and then the other studies that are outlined. And in that bolstering of the plans, we really believe that it's important that we get best in class experts to help us define what those are so that we're not just, doing them off, you know, the cuff, but that they're actually done by people with the qualifications to do that. So as we move forward in that, I really feel like it needs to go into two different phases. One would be the phase one, which are the things that we can immediately begin working on as, port staff. And then phase two is more of the long term. And that is where we're really going to need the experts to come in and deliver. And I'm going to go into more detail on each of these phases. So first, on the proposed phase one, there's really these four areas that we believe that it need to be addressed. One is around the alignment. The 2016 Salt Lake City Northwest Quadrant Master Plan was done in 2016. The city has done a lot of work on that. I think there were 48 initiatives that came out of that plan, and they have accomplished or completed, I think, about half of those, and they continue to move forward on that. And then there's, of course, other existing infrastructure plans that we want to align with. The other is really a positioning. A lot of things that we hear is, you know, when are you going to build the port? When are you going to build all of these things? And so we believe that, you know, we really need to reposition based on this pivot that you just heard in Chad's presentation. And so we really want to create a vision and identity and a brand for the project area, as well as then take the properties that are under UIPA control now and use those to enhance the positioning for the project area. We, of course, need to continue to work on the rail access to support manufacturing. And then to the extent that it's needed, we'll support the positioning with strategic land acquisitions. As part of this phase one, we need to continue to create this economic engine. We want to attract industries with strong economic multipliers for high-wage jobs. We want to explore research opportunities with the universities here in the state. We've got phenomenal research in our universities here that we want to partner with. And then we realize that we need to have a wise use of inducements. We want to make sure that the industries that we are incentivizing are obviously low water users. But clean energy, biotech, composites, aerospace, and advanced manufacturing are those that we really feel are important to help drive the manufacturing and job growth. Finally, the environment. We want to continue to support and mitigation efforts that are going on to protect our natural resources. And we realize that within the boundaries of the jurisdiction, we do have the old North Temple landfill, and we want to be sure that we are looking for solutions for properties that we need remediation. And finally, I would just say that I want to be clear that phase one does not include the development of any logistics facilities. We will not be developing any logistics facilities until phase two is completed. And for us, that's really important because we need the plan to make sure that we know what needs to be developed. So let's talk about phase two. Again, this is the logistics infrastructure plan, which we believe is long overdue. And we want to work alongside with Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County to create a defined scope of work, to run an RFP, and to select a vendor for this. I have to say we've been working with the city and the county, and everyone has been phenomenal to work with. And there's been a lot of support. From our standpoint, the important requirements in this is, as we go through this, is the process and the engagement. It's, you can do a plan rather quickly, but then you sacrifice your process and the engagement. So for us, as we're looking to set this, you know, define the scope of work and to select a vendor, that will be very much important. And then obviously the natural resources and the environment will be another thing that's very important as we go through that process. And then finally, once we feel like the studies that are outlined in the interlocal agreement really are dependent upon what comes out of this logistics infrastructure plan. We need to know what we're going to build so that we can understand what the impact is going to be. And so we'll continue, of course, to work with Salt Lake City on those. And then finally, this is the piece that will take longer. And we expect that this will take somewhere between 24 and 30 months to complete these types of things. So as we talk about the timing, we're talking about the approach today that we are outlining. And then in a subsequent board meeting, we would like to get the board to approve this approach. And then finally, once that happens, we would begin immediately to work on both of the phases simultaneously so that we can get through this as quickly as possible. Ben. And are there any questions?
Thanks, Alan. Ben, any comments?
Alan did, both Chad and Alan did an amazing job. Thank you to them for their presentations. I think they've captured that very well. I would just say, as we're looking at this, the decision to look at phase one, phase two that are running concurrently, as we were having conversations with a lot of stakeholders, the landowners, the city, the county, others, we realized there was 90% that we agreed on. And as Mayor Mendenhall pointed out, there's the 2016 Northwest Quadrant Plan. As we really dug through that, we realized that a lot of what we wanted to do was already contained in there. We realized there's that 10% that ultimately is where we've got the most contention, if I can just say it that way. So the idea is, look, everyone keeps talking about a port, whatever. There's no plans to build a port. Like I think most people are aware of that, but we need to actually start this process. For those who followed the Salt Lake City International Airport expansion, that was 10 to 15 years of planning followed by a 5-year construction period. Particularly, this is important to recognize if we, and I've been part of the port here from the beginning, if we're pushing to use any kind of federal funds in our capital stack, there has to be a realization that not only just in terms of really good planning, but also an early, very early on types of NEPA review, environmental reviews to make sure that we're going the right direction. I'm not going to say this is 10 to 15 years of planning, but I am going to say that bringing in.
I saw 2 years to and a half on that previous screen.
But our hope is we're not backing down from building a logistics facility in the Inland Port, particularly as we're looking at more multimodal air to truck, you know, with rail. The problem is if you look at a rail only, you're going to get a rail solution. We have a very, very unique opportunity. We have I-15 and I-80. We have a UP intermodal facility, and we have an international airport. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, most people would kill to have this area, and we've got to make sure that we're getting the right infrastructure to help. And so I think we're going to take a little bit more broad approach, really look at how we can present something to the board that will have a generational impact, and then we fully intend to help actually build, operate, construct, and construct, operate. That's probably a better time or series. But so we feel like if we do this in a public way in front of the public, that we can justify why we're going the direction that we are. We feel like at the same time, there is a lot that can be done in the short term that will really economically empower this area, whether it's working with universities, whether it's bringing the right kinds of jobs. And I'm not talking about logistics jobs, but higher paying biotech, you know, whatever it may be, a lot of which really have significant transportation needs and will help us, I think, justify really the direction that we're going as well. So as we continue to develop this area out in the short term, we make sure that what we're doing in a public, transparent way with regards to what it is we intend to do with regards to logistics, then we can do the right community impact study, health impact study, and traffic impact study. If we get ahead of ourselves and try and do those studies before we know what we actually should be building, then we feel like we're putting the cart before the horse. So we hope this is a much more methodically sound approach to what we're trying to do in the Northwest Quadrant.
Abby, oh, excuse me.
Of course, Jerry. Go ahead.
Thank you. We have got, you know, there's one partner that we haven't talked a lot about that needs to be a partner to the Inland Port, and that is certainly the state of Utah. We're going to have major traffic highway improvements that are going to have to take place. We know, and we can really guess well what a lot of those are. The 7200 interchange, the other inner 5600, everything is going to have some big improvements on it. And I think the wisest thing for the state to do would be to, we need to guess and guess heavy and move forward on those as quickly as possible. We all know that all of these projects take a lot of years to put together and then a few years to build. So as Ben pointed out with the airport, so that's the other partner that we've got to make sure we keep engaged and make sure that they know where we're at. I am very impressed again. That's the second time I've said that today, and thank you so much.
Thanks, Senator. Representative Schultz.
Thank you. I don't know whether to call you Abby or Madam Chair.
No, Abby's.
Madam Chair sounds good. Thank you. So a couple of things, and Jerry and Ben hit a little bit on a couple of things I was going to talk about, but I just want to agree with Jerry that I think that on the first part anyways, that the master plan outlines collaborative efforts with Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County. I think we need to add state of Utah in there as well, because there are major players in there. As Jerry mentioned, they're the ones that's going to be building most of the large infrastructure on some of the things that need to be done, or at least partner in it. And so I think that's important to keep them as one of the people at the table. And then also, Ben, you hit on this a little bit. I wrote down 10 to 15 years when you said that, because I about fell off my chair in reference to the airport. I was going to make a comment about the 24 to 30 months being way too long. And so is there anything, and I certainly understand the importance of making sure we get the goals and objectives right. We go through the process to truly determine what this looks like 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the road. But it seems like we could be able to do that maybe a little faster than the 24 to 30 months. Is that something we can work on, have a goal? I mean, I hate to approve this at 24 to 30 months and then everybody take that long if we couldn't move faster, I guess what I'm saying.
It's a very good question. Let me just explain the dynamics, and maybe this will help explain the timeline. We anticipate once we get a vendor under contract that developing out the right approach will be done sooner rather than later. Sure. The CIA, the community impact, and thus allows us to move into the next phase of that, which in my mind is really where the community impact, the health impact, and the traffic impact are that where the part of this where they're kind of housed. And so I can see us in the next 12 months probably having the solution that we're talking about. That's the hope. And then making sure that we've got the right mitigation in consultation with our interlocal agreement in Salt Lake. But I think when we get to that tipping point after the next 12 months or so, then we're going to have a really good idea in terms of construction timeline, those types of concepts, that will allow us to move forward very, very quickly.
No, that's in addition to the 24 to 30 months, right? This is just to get us to construction, 24 to 30 months.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I'd love to, and I get it certainly probably quicker than 12 months isn't possible. And honestly, if we had pulled it all off in 12 months, I'd be amazed. But I'd just like to see us maybe kind of shorten that goal a little bit. But understanding it's more important to get it right than rush it through the process. So maybe leaving, you know, maybe going 12 to 30 months or something like that. Just, yeah. I just like to see it move as quickly as possible.
I think we can meet that. I think we can get there.
Victoria?
I just want to put into the public record how amazing it has been. You and Alan, as soon as we had our early morning meeting and signed our portion of the interlocal, you met with me and the mayor and our planning staff and our transportation staff. I think our sustainability department was there. Our public utilities and water reclamation was there. And I see even in this embryonic version of our master plan that's setting the stage for what we ultimately want, every priority that we communicated to you is present here. And so I want the public to know, Ben, earlier you said that we have not done anything perfectly in Salt Lake City. And I'm about done with that line of argument because your commitment to redemption is so strong that it is better than the perfection we could have asked for because it is forward-looking. It is responding to the crisis as it stands now, and it is comprehensive. You have the gravitas of, you know, needing to get this right. So I need the public to know, and I want to publicly thank you for hearing us, for setting our priorities as your own, and for finding ways to make this work for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. I feel like we need a kumbaya moment downstairs. Thank you.
Well,
thank you, Victoria.
That I will say it's a lot because of you, Victoria. Yeah. You've been, was Representative Schultz going to say that?
I was just going to say, Abby, yeah, that's because we're scared of what happens if Victoria gets mad.
Imagine what I could do with a vote if this is what I'm doing now.
No, she's amazing part of this team and this board, and the perspective is so welcome. And thank you for being a partner. We really do appreciate that. Dan, anything from you? No. Okay.
Nope. I think it's great.
Okay. Wonderful. Amy, we're going to invite you up to sit for a while at the chair. She's going to first give us an update on the board policy review and the procurement policy prior to us considering this adoption. And we will take public comment after her presentation. But Amy, time is yours.
Great. Thank you so much. We wanted to follow up on two policies that have been presented, prior draft policies to the board. The first one is that board review policy, and we've received some really good public input on this. And really this sets a nice framework for how we want to move forward with the secondary policy we're going to present, how we want to introduce policies in a draft format, and then bring it to the board for feedback and vote. So some of the changes with this policy, and I believe it was presented several months ago. I don't have the date in front of me. We're looking at the enhancements that will put out a draft at least 7 days in advance of the meeting, so it allows the public to view and comment, that we look at a 2-meeting cycle for new policies and revisions to policies so we could introduce it. And then in the second follow-up meeting, like we're doing with these two policies I'll be speaking to, open it up to a board vote. A caveat on that is we want to be able to allow public comment prior, and when I say public comment, very specific to these policies that are being presented for vote, and then allow the board to vote on it. In between meetings where a new draft policy has been presented, we're going to allow public input through our Contact Us page on our website. This allows us to centralize that and look at enhancements that need to be made. And then also looking at providing this consolidated feedback to the board, as well as adding that public feedback, written public feedback, as a supplemental to the board meeting. So that's a summary of the things, changes we've made. This policy in specific, we're going to have Larry Shepard be the policy owner. In that respect, he'll be responsible for further changes. And because the board's secretary is going to be running point on a lot of consolidating written feedback between board meetings, it just is a natural fit. So I will pause there to see if there's any questions or comments from the board at this time on that specific policy.
Thanks, Amy. I would venture to say that this might be the longest time period a public entity in the state of Utah has open policy comment for a policy change. So this is incredible. I hope the public recognizes that and takes note of that. Any other comments from the board? Okay, we'll now invite the public to comment.
I have one additional one before we move on.
There's two of them. Sorry, Amy.
So this is the procurement policy, and we have received a widespread amount of feedback since we presented it at last board meeting. The integrated feedback is included of our legal counsel, also state procurement. Initially, we sought finance and audit committee feedback. We've also had feedback from our new CFO, Ben Bies, who came from the legislative audit team. And we also had, I really want to call out some of our public commentary, Richard Holman and Joan Gregory and those folks, in providing some comments in addition to what we put out there in the last meeting. As a recap of some of the key things that we put in place. This was a staff policy prior to now being elevated to a board policy. We've added some additional segregation of duties. That means not one person can buy or request something, as well as being the final approver. And we see we have our CFO as that gatekeeper. He cannot request anything himself for purchase. It does have to go through an executive team member. We've added conflicts of interest and confidentiality specific as it relates to our evaluation committee members, which we are citing state procurement policy on that. We've added additional enhancements for board approval and additional roles and responsibilities, which some of the feedback we've received from state procurement has asked to really keep that specific to a solicitation officer that we had split out before. Some of the additional things that we have done is we've enhanced the language around the government agency to really put specific local, state, and federal, where there's a competitive bid that's been put in place. We wanted to reduce any vagary around that. We put in some additional around board approval for the payment of real estate brokerage fees as it goes into place. And again, some additional board approvals. If there's a sole source greater than $250,000, we want to seek that with board approval. The new language, of course, is that the executive director and myself will have to put in writing that it is sole source and keep that documented. And we've added some enhanced language around concession agreements, where we will leverage state purchasing and using the competitive sealed proposal for that to look at things that are best value, where we're looking to maybe have an external entity using either a lease land that was in with the organizational property to conduct business. Henceforth, things like truck parking would fit that example. Those are a high level summary. So that is, again, I'll open it up to any comments on this procurement policy. I know there's been a lot of vested interest in this, and this was a public commitment from the audit report that we would get something in place by this month and get board approval. So we really wanted to move rapidly on this policy as we anticipate a bunch of others coming forward.
Wonderful. Thanks, Amy. Any comments from the board?
Yeah. Abby, can I say something?
Of course.
Yeah, I just want to applaud the Utah Land Port Authority for getting this done so fast. These are some of the biggest concerns that were some of these gaps in policy that were just outlined, particularly in the second set, were some of the biggest concerns highlighted in the audit. And I think many of the largest concerns that some folks have had around independent entities in general. And so super excited that these have gone in place so fast and so thoroughly, and just, you know, great job by the port and their team.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate that. All right. Let's invite the public to comment on the two policies that Amy has detailed. Larry, will you please open up the queue? Again, reminder to the public, if you wish to give comment virtually on these policies, now is the time to raise your hand to be added to the queue. Once we begin, we will no longer accept any public comment cards or additions to our virtual queue. Please remember that all comments at this time will be limited to the policies under consideration. And we do have a 2-minute approval. Larry, are there any comments from here in?
There are no comments from people here in the room that have been turned in. We do have some online that are looking to speak. The first one will be Melinda McElwain.
Did you say Melinda, Larry?
Yes.
Melinda, the time is yours.
Melinda, you should be able to speak now.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can, yes.
Okay. Thank you for the time. I've read over a bunch of stuff about internal controls, whistleblowers, transparency, regional economic empowerments, and I'm here once more to protest the entirety of this project. We have all been hearing a lot about the collapse of our Great Salt Lake ecosystem. Even the brine shrimp are dying, which is catastrophic if you are an eared grebe or common goldeneye, who have for time immemorial migrated through here. And yet we continue to build. Winter is retreating in our mountains and with it our water supply. Where will 150 million square feet of warehousing get water? As Dan Hammett said, less is more. And the only environmental mitigation that I can see is to organize what we have now and base it on local production, not global, and maybe not to build it all. Thank you.
Melinda, thank you for your comment. Larry, next one in the queue, if you'll give us a few names.
Yes, there are two more in the queue, and that will be all for the comment on these specific proposals before the board. We'll hear from Katie Pappas and Joan Gregory in that order.
Great. Katie, the time is yours.
Hi, my name is Katie Pappas, and I'm part of the Stop the Polluting Port Communication Improvement Team. I want to thank Ben, Miles, and especially Amy for meeting with us, listening to our ideas, and incorporating some of them into BPO6 Board Policy Review and BPO7 Procurement Policy. We appreciate that you're now providing more information to the public prior to board meetings, having a minimum of 2 meetings to discuss and review policy, accepting public comment on new and revised policies prior to the board's vote, and making it easier to submit written comments. Looking forward, I hope these same ideals will be applied to other board decisions and discussions. That would be a huge step toward greater transparency and accountability. Thanks again.
Katie, thanks so much for the comments and being part of the process and participating. We really do appreciate that. Joan, you're next in the queue. Time shares.
Hi, this is Joan, and I just wanted to add my words of appreciation and thanks to Ben, Miles, and especially Amy for this process. This has been the best process that we've done so far in terms of policies, and I just really appreciate that, and the communication improvement team very much appreciates that. We've already been talking about additional ways to make things more transparent and more accessible to the public. And I second all what Katie said, and I hope to see more of this in the future. Richard also was part of our team and gave all those comments in terms of procurement. And I encourage you to seek out expertise in the general community, like Richard, who can give a different insight and yet an expert insight into the policies that are being developed. So thank you, and special kudos to Amy. You did a great job. Thank you.
Joan, thanks so much. From the moment I met you 3 months ago at Victoria's home for dinner, Cajun dinner. What do we have? Cajun dinner? Cuban dinner. I'm sorry. You've always been a great open collaborator, and this is a great day to chair, you guys. Let's three comments and two of them were gratitude. Yeah, I'm going to go with that, Ben. He said it must be the chair, so I'm going to go with that. But thank you for those that participated. We need more collaborative and open dialogue, and we need that just in society in general. So happy to continue to have that. So thanks again for those that commented. We will actually now go back to the board to approve both policies. So can I get a motion to approve policies BP-07, board policy review policy. That's a tongue twister. And BP-07, procurement policy.
Madam Chair, I make the motion that we approve BP-06, board policy review, and BP-07, procurement policy.
Thanks, Representative Schultz. Can I get a second on that?
I would second.
Thanks, Senator. All those in favor of 06 and 07 policies, please say aye.
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 Thanks, Dan. All right, Amy, back in the hot seat. We're going to hear from you to provide us information on two more policies that will actually come before the board next month. So again, sticking to what we just voted on, just explained, we will hear from them. We'll give it a month to percolate inside the community on online, and then we will move to motion the following month. So, of course.
Just very, very quickly on this, Katie and Joan, so appreciate your willingness to engage. I do want to highlight, Amy spent a lot of time on this. She was working weekends. I know she was meeting with people, you know, day and night. Even, you know, up until today, trying to make sure that we got as close as we could to what the public had submitted. So somebody said, I think it was Joan, said huge kudos to Amy. I just want to echo that. Just a lot of time and effort put in on these. So
I think I've been dreaming of policies. I joke about that. I dream work, and you know, it's really important. And I do want to call out, I really appreciate Joan and Katie and Richard. I know he has been involved and I know that these are folks that really care. They are taking so much time. They're passionate about what happens in the community. And I really appreciate this thoughtful feedback process. And I'm excited now that we've actually really proven how we're going to engage in public commentary prior to a vote. I am excited to move this process forward. So these next two policies that we're going to be bringing up, and then I'll give you a little highlight of what we expect for the next meeting, just so folks are aware. We want to talk about the internal control program policy. As you know, if you look at the, I think it's like 27 best practices, one of the points was talking about how the executive director, in tandem with the board, puts together internal control policies. And I thought, how best would it be to take this internal policy that is something I authored and enhanced over the last year and bring this to a board policy? I know folks have, from the board may have heard me present on this before. When you look at this policy, it's really the high level context of how we identify a risk, how we associate appropriate controls, And some of these controls are indeed policies, board policies and other processes, how we test adherence to those controls and even deal with corrective actions when something's gone wrong and we have to mitigate and change. Within this policy, it really talks about how we use subject matter experts to look at that risk assessment to help us figure out what is in different thresholds of what we'd say a high, medium, and low, how we conduct and put together a risk severity score and the associated, you know, if it's a high greater than 7 severity score, what that means is having that required control. And of course, if there's a statutory regulatory component, even if there's our subject matter experts deem it as a lower severity, because there's that regulatory statutory component, we put a control in place and a control test. So that is a high level overview of what that policy is. It does follow the COSO model, which is an international standard for compliance and risk management. You'll also find it referenced in state finance controls. So it's something widely used and adopted. And I've also followed that within prior jobs I've had before coming to the port. So I'll pause there. If there's any questions about that from the board, any kind of refinements, and of course, we'll do a secondary draft in December for approval.
Looking to the board for any comments or questions. I don't see any, Amy.
Thank you. The next one is the whistleblower policy. And again, one of those 27 best practices is that the board adopts a whistleblower policy and hotline. We have met with the state auditor's office that does have one, just asked them if it's still appropriate for us to leverage that. And they said, yes, that's just fine, which is great because then we don't have to go to an outside vendor and spend additional costs on this. This whistleblower policy really adopts state statute in that protection when somebody's coming up with good faith with things around ethical concerns, misuse of public funds, that they have an external way of reporting that and having it actioned. And of course, within our policy, we talk about staff members can go to their immediate manager, they can go to the executive director, they can go to myself, and even the board. And reach out to them. The board may convene a closed meeting if needed to discuss it. And of course, it talks about leveraging that whistleblower hotline. That is the highlights of that policy. And it is a shorter one, but I feel like we've really covered our bases on really making sure we're protecting those that come in good faith to bring up concerns that they see. So I'll pause there and see if there's any other feedback on this.
Thanks, Amy. Looking to the board, any more comments? I don't see any. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I think just so you can anticipate, we are planning on bringing a personnel policy or segregation of duties and record retention policies next board meeting, maybe even more. So we're really trying to get these requirements in place and approved. So we've got those in motion. So more to come. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for everything, Amy. Appreciate it. Larry, time has come for general public comment time period. So if you'll open the queue, and again, we just said this a few minutes ago, but if you wish to give a comment virtually, now's the time to raise your hand, be added to the queue. Once we begin, we will no longer accept public comment cards or additions to our virtual queue, and we will begin the public comment period. Any, Lynn, from the public? I do have one. And he is here. David is here. Wonderful, David. Larry, are you good on the virtual queue? We'll start with David, if you want to step up to the microphone, David. Your handwriting is impeccable.
It comes from architecture school.
I was going to ask if you were an engineer, so.
It's a dying art. There's a lot that has been gone on and been discussed here today, and it's really kind of overwhelming. I'm a planner as well as an architect, and it's in that capacity that I'd like to speak to you today. It's wonderful to hear this panel talk about planning, because I've been kind of bugging people about it since the beginning, and until recently it fell on pretty deaf ears. But I want to thank you all for undertaking a process that will allow you and the public to understand where we're going, what we expect out of this thing. I've never run something like UEPA, but I have started a couple of businesses. And when we start businesses and we put down what we call a business plan, it has some questions right up front that I think you're kind of aiming towards asking and answering, but it's really not clear yet. The very first question business has to ask itself is, what business are we in? And it's not clear to me yet exactly what business the Utah Inland Port Authority is in. Once we decide what we are trying to do, what advantages do we have in accomplishing it, and what might be some risks that we face down the road in accomplishing this? Since this is a governmental undertaking, usual questions about competition perhaps don't apply, but we're in this for a very long run. And as everybody knows, there are events in course that will affect what I think is going to be the business plan of this organization. I don't need to go into them. I think everybody knows what they are. But I would, the original quote unquote business plan was nothing like business plans that I've been involved in preparing. And I hope that the revision will be more so. I understand the desire for brevity, but we also have to have some real substance. Thank you.
David, appreciate it. Continue to engage, and we appreciate the time you took to come up here tonight. Do we have any more, Lynn, from the... Okay, wonderful. Larry, to you for the virtual comments.
Yes, great. We have five in the queue now that we'll hear from. We'll start with Dita Seed and then move to Tussie King.
Great, thanks. Dita, time is yours.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Awesome. So thank you so much for your work to improve transparency. There are still some big holes, though, in terms of what the public knows. For example, you were talking about property UEPA controls. The public has no understanding of what those properties are. That's just an example I want to put out there that would be helpful for us to know what the scope of your holdings or control is. And then with regard to the business plan, when I read it, I honestly thought it was an outline. I don't think that document can stand as a business plan you can measure against. It's so vague. What are you measuring? So that's a big concern. And then finally, this sort of goes to transparency again. Some of our members have submitted grammar requests to rural counties to try and find out what's happening with satellite ports. And there's just a lot of conflicting information right now. There are people out there representing themselves as a satellite port coalition and suggesting that they're going to be getting infrastructure fund money in short order. So, you know, what is it that that you're actually intending to do? And are you going to clarify with these other folks, particularly in Washington County and Iron County, what's really happening here? Finally, Representative Schultz seems interested in building something, but what is it you're building? And how can you even know what that is without going through a thorough planning process? So, you know, this kind of rush to build is exactly what got us into the mess that we're in the first place. Thank you.
Thanks, Dita. Yes, Ben would like to clarify.
Yes, no, to the question of what our holdings are, right now we have the property on 1100 South, right south of the Union Pacific Station. We also have the SNL building. It's a warehouse factory. I know we've given all of these in a prior update to the board. The third we have is with Stadler Rail and property that is immediately north of their property. So those are the three ones that we have in holding. And to the point on planning, that's what was discussed during the master plan was, Dita, we know, like, that's what we're certainly acknowledging that. And it's our intent to have a public transparent process where we go through what it is that we intend to do and make sure that we're going in the right direction. Cause I think you're spot on in how you represented exactly where we're at. And so what we're trying to do is to say, how do we in a public transparent way get from where we're at now to where we need to go and ultimately what we intend to build in a way that is defendable and is public and transparent. And so I will maintain we're going to take an honest, holistic look at what is best for logistics in the Northwest Quadrant, but we fully intend to do that in a transparent way. So
thanks, Ben. Larry, next is Tussie. Tussie, this time is yours.
Yes, Tussie King, followed by Monica Hilding.
Tussie, are you there?
Hi, I just had to unmute. Can you hear me?
We've got you. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. I'm a lifelong resident of Salt Lake City, and as a social worker, I'd like to take you on sort of a paradigm shift, if you will, as to my feelings about the port. As a social worker, we look at the total person holistically. So we look at their biopsychosocial spiritual perspective on the client, and we start where the client is at. We look for areas of strengths. We try to use a strengths perspective. But I want to encourage you to look at where the client is at this current moment. I feel like this area that's so close to the Great Salt Lake, we're looking at an area that is really, is it a good place for building? We've seen what happened with the prison. It was really hard to build in that area. So I wonder if anybody's looked at the geological area for how difficult it might be to build there before we go ahead with all of this. The Great Salt Lake is dying. We know that we have some of the most unhealthy air in Salt Lake City. Today, according to the AQI, it's unhealthy. Tomorrow and Wednesday, if you look at that, it's going to be in the orange category. I still don't understand how you guys are saying a port is really going to help clear up the air quality when we're going to have more diesel trucks, more planes, automobiles, trips coming in and out of Salt Lake City. Also, do we have the water to sustain the development? We're in a climate crisis. And so I would suggest that you look at where the client is right now before proceeding further. Thank you.
Thanks, Tussie. Appreciate your time. Larry, next is Monica.
Yes, Monica Hilding and then Terry Durfee.
Monica, time is yours. Monica, do we have you?
Yes. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My concern with the UEPA board is that so many of you have been intimately involved with the Governor's Office of Economic Development, or whatever it is called these days. Surrounded by reinforcing voices, both groups seem so removed from the concerns of the general public, especially those who reside in Salt Lake City. Those who will be affected most by the paving over of the wetlands and playas have been, for the most part, ignored and openly disdained by their legislature and government. With the arrests of so many young people who openly protested against the port in the summer of 2019, UEPA and the legislature have effectively shut down the voices of so many. A climate lawsuit against the state brought by a group of young activists was thrown out by Judge Faust on November 10th, 2022, after attorney Jeffrey Tyker, representing the state Board of Oil, Gas, and Mining, and numerous other state government defendants, urged Faust to dismiss the suit. Quote, the Utah Constitution does not guarantee a clean environment, Tyker said. He said claims such as those lodged by the students should be brought against polluters, not the state. So are these young people supposed to go after the state's largest polluters, Kennecott and U.S. Magnesium LLC? How can these youths be expected to take on these large corporations with incredibly deep pockets that have been actively destroying the Great Salt Lake for so many years? This ruling marks a sad day for myself and all other youth across the state of Utah, as the lower court has determined it is not interested in hearing our plea of our constitutional right to life, said Dalen R., another youth plaintiff. Thank you.
Thanks, Monica. Next up, Terry.
Yes, my name is Terry Durfee, and as a reminder, we have been in a drought for over 20 years, which has turned into the aridification of the state and entire western United States. The Great Salt Lake maybe has 4 to 5 months before complete ecological failure. We don't have time to wait. We need to make immediate and drastic changes. These projects are a huge distraction and waste of time and money when we need to focus on our climate. You talk about regional economic opportunities, but are the general public in agreement with these few county leaders? Because I know there is a opposition in Tooele County, and where exactly is the water going to come from? We are mostly left with underground water, which isn't an unlimited resource. It requires snow and water to fill these underground areas for wells. You keep talking about importing and exporting with a heavy emphasis on rail, when a study has already been done by Professor Leachman, who is an actual expert, that shows the market just isn't there for either in our state. And what manufacturing won't use much water? We know that giant warehouses don't include high-paying jobs. The only reason there is development going on in the Northwest Quadrant currently is due to irresponsible zoning changes and incentives provided to those developers. It is mind-boggling to me how you can't see the huge disasters occurring right in front of your face. This is not helpful. If all of our water disappears, there won't be any public left, not to mention the air, water, light, and noise pollution. We must focus all our energy on saving the Great Salt Lake and all of our water resources. Please stop any further damage and start caring about the situation we are in. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Larry, do we have one more from the...
Yes, one more. Steve Van Maren.
Steve, if you can hear us, the time is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. I'm sorry I dropped in late. I don't feel qualified to comment on your policies, but I did notice a typo. BP stands for board policy, not business plan. No, I'm just kidding. It's confusing initially. BP 07 on page 13 of 16. The page is headed BP 09. I'm sure that's just a slight error because I couldn't find any equivalent language in BP 09. Thank you for your time.
Well, Stephen, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for catching that. And it doesn't reflect that on our printed one, but we'll make sure online that it's changed. So appreciate that. All right. Now I got fumbled looking back at the policy. So let me get back to where we need to get to here. All right. Perfect. Do we have any other comments from the board? Ben, anything else from you? Any other board member? All right, well, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I want to compliment the chair on the way the meeting was ran. Thank you.
That is the greatest compliment, Senator. Thank you. I just learned from the good ones.
Well, very well done.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adjourn.
All right. We don't need a second on that one, right? That's perfect. So we'll call this meeting to adjourn and we'll see everyone back in December. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. And to staff, thank you for all that you've done. This has been a tremendous tide shift and it's hats off and kudos to all of you that have worked so hard to get us to where we're at. So thank you.